Witches, it's Amy from Missing Witches coming at you with another episode of Witches Found. I'm super excited to share this week's episode with you because Risa was with us. Yay! We spoke to an Ayurvedic practitioner, and also as a special treat, we reached out to Ipsita Roy Chakraverty via email, and she got back to us. So we're going to unpack her answers with the help of an Ayurvedic practitioner and good friend of ours, Besha. Yay! Enjoy.
So Ayurveda is the ancient medicinal system in India. So Ayur means the science of life, basically. So the Vedas are the books that carry this knowledge. Ayurveda is basically what encompasses self-care and values and belief systems around that from India.
And his lineage originated in India.
It's like 5,000 years, something like that. Like pretty old. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we chose Besha as an expert in an Indian style self-care to play the part of Ipsita Roy Chakraverty in this email interview. So thank you so much, Besha, for bringing your expertise to this.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, and I feel like for context, it's Risa. Hi. I'm not going to be in all of the Witches Found interviews because Amy's doing them because I'm now 8 months pregnant and just moved last week to live up north. And we're here with Ayurveda Besha and Amy in my house where I live now, which is weird. You guys maybe listened to the episode with Ipsita. If you haven't, maybe go listen to that first.
Well, please do.
Or, you know, you can listen to us talk about it and make references to it for like a half an hour before you do. That's your call. And we reached out to her, like, thinking maybe this incredible... First of all, having the realization she's alive. Like, this this witch that we found who, like, lived in Montreal when she was little, like, that we have these connections to, is, like, still alive, still...
A human person.
A human
you
person.
You create these legends in our minds, and they become titans rather than people.
And it's still, like, a badass practicing witch, and we reached out to her and did not expect a response. But heard back from her through Deepta.
Shout out Deepta.
Shout out Deepta. So lovely.
And we think daughter, but definitely rep.
Yeah. And we were able to send her some questions, some follow-up questions based on the episode and us reading her books and just kind of being excited about what she's thinking about these days. So that's the context for these questions. But then I wanted to ask you, because you're here as our...
You, Besha,
as our guest. And we can cut this out if you don't feel comfortable answering, but how does a white girl from North Bay, Ontario find Ayurveda?
Yeah, good question. I think it was a combination of two things. By the time I was 20, I was ready to continue exploring my spiritual beliefs, starting out being Catholic and found some limitations. And so different Hindu quotes and different Hinduism started to like filter into my life and draw my interest, and my mind just started to grow spiritually from there. And the other side of the coin is just not having healthcare, not great healthcare here. It's like finding a family doctor. I think it's like 10 years, 15 years, and I've been on waiting lists. And so it was like, you know, wanting to take my own health in my own hands and be preventative, because I didn't see a lot of hope, honestly, at that time for access, proper access. So between the two, they just naturally grew, and living in urban centers, my access to information and people was just was there. So it naturally grew from that point.
Was there a school that you went to? Is there training?
Yeah, definitely. So my own organic growth with Hinduism kind of started at that point. But officially, it was only through a certain axis in my life where I was changing my idea about my career and wanting what I wanted to focus on, where I just found Anita, which she's a fourth generation Vidya from India in Montreal. And
do you want to shout out her name one more time?
Anita Sharma. Yeah, the Institute, Ayurvedic Institute in Montreal. And I went to go and visit her, and I knew right away it was just a calling. It was like, even though I had no idea what it was going to lead into, I thought it would only be my personal journey. And I took the leap of faith that I could handle this ultimately crazy complex learning with her, and embarked on a 3-year education with her, like Gurukuma style. So you're on the floor, and it's a very small group, and it's for a couple of years, and you fulfill a training, become certified, and your whole life changes.
But it's not something, it's not a learning that stops. Like, you're now studying Ayurvedic astrology.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is a lifelong, it really, the thing is that it taps into every aspect of life. Like Hinduism, you know, we'll talk about from the economy to, you know, every aspect of life's law. So similarly in Ayurveda, it really, really explores such a vast area of health. And it reaches to the cosmos, basically. So, yeah, I'll never be able to, you know, have all the learning and education this one lifetime. So definitely, yeah, it's an ongoing process.
And you teach yoga and...
Yeah, yeah. I think without it, I have to, like, embody part of the, like, space to hold this sacred knowledge. And yoga is just, like, keeps opening all that tightness. So it's, yeah, just so complimentary to do them together.
The little bit that I know about Ayurveda, which is so small, has to do with, and this is just my total ignorance, but there's like body, people with have different body types or energy. So I met someone who was a Ayurveda student who, like, and I was organizing an event at the time, and she was trying to explain this to the group. And the group was asking, like, what type of person am I? What type of person am I? And they went, what type of person is Risa? And right away she was like, ugh, she's fire. Or something like that. Like, ugh, this one. And I was like, you don't know me.
Do you want to break down the doshas? Yeah, tell us what doshas are and then break them down real quick.
It's, so all of life is explored through the concepts of the elements. So the fire, air, water, earth, ether. And so we all have all of the elements within us. It's just we're each a unique snowflake and we have our own makeup, but there's like DNA, there's genetic, there's tendencies. And so everyone does lean towards, a favorable or unfavorable, however you want to see it, the spectrum. So basically it'll come down to the doshas are Vata, Pitta, and Kapha.
And these are these like types that Risa was
talking they're about. The mixes of the fire and the earth and the water, and you know they're kind of broken up that way, and that, you know, comes down to your, from your emotions to your plasma to your, you know, how, what is your makeup, how much in your cookie dough, how much chocolate do you have, how much sugar do you have, basically it's just that. So what kind of cookie do you taste like after? And then the gunas, which are bigger and vaster than that but similar. The gunas are, there's three gunas, so Rajas, Tamas, and Sattva. So that kind of explains how the whole universe is within those three systems too. Whereas Rajas is like a crazy, intense energy. Sattva is very blissful. And Tamas could be like heavy or depressive. I'm using very limited terms. There's so many ways to describe those energies. But basically that's the...
It kind of sounds like the medieval humors.
Totally.
To me. But this is where I've kind of always had a stopping point with it, because I'm like, wasn't that bullshit? Didn't we figure out that was like, you can't cure sicknesses by just eating, if you have a fever, eating something cold or whatever. But I did feel like there was, not to be like a doubter, but also just to maybe be the voice of some people listening who are like, tell me more.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And so there's literature that connects those and to kind of see the boundaries and how they interact and stuff. So, there is all those experiences that are also documented within, you know, using those sciences that had been developed at, you know, those times. However, with the difference in my limited knowledge is that because it extends so vastly, the Ayurveda, right, and it touches on so many other spectrums, that it is just a vaster body. So in terms of like preventing or effects, and you're going from, like I kind of mentioned, from the tiniest atom cell to the cosmos. So if you can imagine your body in a complex scenario that way.
And to get back to your medieval thing, I think Western culture does sort of have a habit of like taking amazingly vast things from other cultures and breaking them down into like incorrect.
Sure. And be like, this is science now, you guys. Yeah. We put leeches on you. I read about it one time. Mm-hmm.
So totally. Maybe the medieval, you know, Western medieval culture didn't get it right, but maybe, you know.
Yeah, because in Ayurveda, it's not, they don't disconnect. Like in Hinduism, same thing. And it breaks down in their own culture, how they live out things, but it's not limited to, an end. There's no end to the knowledge that brings you somewhere within your health spectrum. I mean, whether it be a god that could like have and mantras or yoga postures or food or herbs or family or you know, it just touches on everything. So there's no stopping or ending. Whereas some of this knowledge is more limited to the healthcare practitioner and the like, what we're going to do with this acute or this scenario, as opposed to how are you living everything.
Right. And that's sort of like, Beisha is my Ayurveda, full disclosure. And the first time we met, you know, in a friendly way, but then I sought her out as a client. And she asked me more questions than all the doctors that I've ever had all put together, you know, questions that doctors have never asked me. And so I got the sense that Ayurveda is less about being a doctor, less about being a healer, and more about being a teacher of self-care. Mm. Would you agree with that? And
yeah, I would refrain from using the word teacher, because I really like to see it that I'm trying to be a mirror, and I'm trying to mirror back to the person everything they've expressed to me. And so they can be empowered to recognize that and recognize themselves, their own patterns and habits that possibly may be contributing to their suffering.
So like a self-care mentor.
Yeah. Maybe we can say. Yeah, that might be a little more.
I wanted to go back to that, that you said that you kind of found your way to it because of struggles with the healthcare system. Because that obviously, I think that's a point that the three of us have in common. And I don't know so much about your story, but it sounds like similar, that there was something chronic that like first of all, shout out to Canadian healthcare. It's quite awesome. Super thankful for it. We're all nodding enthusiastically. Everybody gets socialized medicine.
Having a surgery and not getting a bill at the end of it is, I can't even imagine people who live in the States and have to deal 100%. With the constant fear of getting hurt.
Totally.
And then getting a bill. On
oh my
plus.
God.
So be it resolved. Yeah. Thank you, Canada. You're problematic. You're not perfect, but we love you.
Everybody Amen. Gets socialized medicine. America, we want it for you. We love you. But I did, you know, I go to the doctor every week now because I'm going to pop this human out any second, and I don't pay for that, and I'm not going to pay for my, you know, my private room at my hospital and all this kind of stuff. So shout out to all of that miracle. That's incredible. But I did have a migraine for 10 years straight from the time that I was like 17 to 27 or 15 to 25 around there. And I definitely hit on the raw edges of a healthcare system where I sort of fell off the edge. I mean, I was just at one point just prescribed so many different pills for a young person. I would wait an hour to see a doctor for 5 minutes who would tell me that it was all in my head or all of this kind of stuff. And I mean, for me, I found a way out of chronic pain, and I know a lot of people don't, and I'm thankful for it all the time. And it wasn't through Ayurveda, although when I encountered Ayurveda many years later, I was like, oh, this idea of something that looked at the whole person, this could have helped.
This probably could have helped.
This could help. For me, it was Alexander training that ended up helping, but that was after years of yoga and, you know, therapy and all of these changes in my head, too.
Beisha, I know you have some experience with Alexander therapy. I know nothing, so can you guys talk about that for a second?
Yeah. What is it? I really fell in love immediately when I experienced my first moment with it. I had met a woman in I was going to this institute, Thomas More Institute, this great institute here in Montreal that explores all these fantastic topics. And And she was an Alexander technician. And I had told her I was, you know, getting a sore shoulder from work, blah, blah, blah. She's like, well, let me just introduce this little idea to you. Can you imagine the space between you and the back wall behind you? And I was like, what the hell? But as I was thinking that, I was like, oh my God, my shoulder is starting to feel amazing. So yeah, and then we did a couple sessions together. And honestly, it's still mysterious to me because I haven't found a lot of actual literature that explores the depth of it. It just kind of touches in and out of it.
Okay, so but, I'm the ignoramus over here. I know Alexander Method isn't imagine the wall behind you. This is obviously a technique.
In my experience, and this is like I'm nodding, but that nobody's told me to imagine the wall behind me. And my sister went to the same like trainer or whatever as I did, and she had a completely different experience than I did. So I think it would be really different for each person because it is about how you are using your skeleton and your musculature and your fascia and your mind in your space, in your day to day. So for me, I went for like 6 months, 3 times a week or something like that. And I basically stood up and sat down.
Okay.
And because for me, it was, I'd had a bad fall and then I had built a system of protecting my neck after a fall. So yeah, all of us are doing all the same gesture. Our shoulders are up high. Up to our ears, yeah. And my head was rammed down. So there was no space between the bones of my skull and the top of my vertebrae. Because I was trying to protect all in there. And in x-rays, they showed all of my vertebrae and my neck were touching. They're not supposed to do that. And there was just sort of these like cascading effects all down my spine and in my pelvic bones and in my shoulders. And so it's crazy to me that the most effective thing that I did was stand up and sit down. But he stood behind me and I would stand up and he would just, with the lightest touch on the back of my head, be like, and he had a skeleton in the room and pictures of what a healthy musculature looked like and healthy in the sense of like, you know, someone who hasn't lived in Western society for their whole life. So healthy in the sense of like you lived in where there was trees and you swam and, you know, you used your body a little more differently than we do in these, you know, hard chairs or whatever. So different types of like skeletons around, and he would kind of point to them and then touch his hand on the back of my head and be like, do you need to hold this? Okay, sit down, you know, and then touch his hand between my shoulder blades and be like, do you need to hold this? While you stand up? I don't think you do. Like, I think this holds this on its own. Okay, sit down. And then be like, you tensed all of this to sit down. Do you need to hold that to sit down? I don't think this is involved in sitting down. You know, or he would just hold my elbow, my arm out, and then be like, while I was sitting, and be like, I'm holding this now. You're not holding it. And I can feel it right now. I'm holding Amy's arm and she's holding all the weight of her arm. She's not letting me hold her arm. Yeah. And then he'd be like, okay, but this, you don't have to hold your head there. You can put your vertebrae can stack nicely. They can stack nicely on their own. And little gestures and like, I'm trying to pull Amy's shoulder. It's all tight in her shoulder like she's pissed at me. And I'm sure that's what it was like when he was adjusting me too. Because in my head, I would be fighting him and be like, I'm not holding that, except I need to hold that. Fuck you. Which is not at all an explanation of what Alexander training is, but that was my experience.
Standing up and sitting down, yeah. and having it like reminding your body to care for itself, yeah. and like, you don't need this stress.
I looked up and I like you, you know, there's, you know, scientific trials that show its effectiveness for back pain and head pain, but it does get applied way more broadly than that. So be careful because there aren't blind trials supporting its usefulness for fucking everything.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You know, keep searching. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it came out of like dance and the arts. I know a lot of people in the Montreal Symphony Orchestra use the same teacher as I do because you're going to build your body around a cello, for example, mm-hmm. whatever. Anyway, that's sort of a deviation, but we are talking about self-care and I think the place where our spirituality meets our body, because I was released from a lot of different kinds of pain when I was released from that pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same with me. My whole life started to unfold, actually, not long after that, into my training with Anita. I was going from one career to the other, and I met Alexander Technique in between. And I think just exploring and learning and being surprised by this space that I wasn't accessing within my body, suddenly was an invitation to go and explore.
So if, as an Ayurveda, you can give our listeners, like, what is the one thing that we all need to be doing or doing more of, just as a general across the board?
That's a great question. Because I find, especially here in the West, we're so hyper-conscious of what is the right thing to eat. What is the thing not to eat? And everyone is so bombarded by so much information and trends in healthcare. And so many people are not grounded on knowing how to discern information for themselves, their unique selves, and realizing they're a unique snowflake. And most of it is all one size fits all. So honestly, immediately I'm like refraining to even answer your question because there's so many different kind of listeners. And I don't want anyone to do, yeah, I'm going to do that. That's right. That's right. She said it. So it must mean that it's, you know, that's what we should probably do if I'm inclined to Ayurveda.
So maybe your one piece of advice is look inward before you look outward.
Completely. And oddly enough, I'll say, you know, look to the place where your spirit and your body meets and to see what that is telling you before you go out.
Where is this place? How do we access this place where our spirits and our bodies meet?
It's in the maybe the quietness of the challenge you're living within, which we're usually just running from and going to buy back a pack of pills or let me buy this Ayurvedic herb. And then I'll send you back and say, well, why don't you just go and listen to your favorite song for a while and contemplate. And if you really think you need to come back and buy it, then come back. But don't buy it now because it's not coming from the right place.
Sorry, kids. No easy answers here either. Man,
this reminds me, we started our Missing Witches Instagram and we love the people that we get to meet there. And then we had this heartbreaking day where I think we posted a photo of a love spell or something, or love yourself spell.
Oh, yeah. Always self-love. Yeah.
Basically, all the spells that Amy and I do are self-love spells. And we've been like improvising magic together now for several years. And we are not people who, we like to study stuff, obviously. We wouldn't have a research-based podcast if not. But we are real heavy in the... fuck you, I figured it out myself. Kind of magic. And also, you know, we've seen a lot of positive effects from the things that we've improvised. So we feel pretty comfortable with our method. And our method is always learning and always improvising. So I think you posted something like that that was beautiful and tries to touch on how that practice works for us. And then we had people messaging us desperate for a love spell.
And shocked that we didn't sell love spells.
Right.
Like, oh, do you guys do love spells? We're like, no. And they're like, really? Like,
yeah, that we wouldn't provide a recipe, that we wouldn't sell something.
Or that we don't, and we would say this, like, I think we answered all of the inquiries with, we do spells for self-love or like a global love, you know, may we all care for each other and love each other. But I would, me personally, and honestly, do what you gotta do to get yourself through the night. But I personally believe that a love that comes from me messing with a person's free will is not love. And an extension of that outside of magic, if somebody loves me for the person that I'm pretending to be, they don't love me. Mm. So I don't get any sustenance from that. Mm-hmm. I don't get any sustenance from somebody loving a character that I've put on for them to play. And I think of love spells as the same, exactly the same thing. If I have to force you, I mean, okay. And again, like, pay attention to me spell. Sure. Notice me.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, because sometimes that there's no school to go to. Here's how you fall in love.
Right.
There's no college degree that you can get. That's like, here's how you find a relationship. It is luck. honestly, it's magic. It's whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
I like, you know, I follow and read some witches who are like, you want to do a love spell on someone, fucking do it. Like, try it. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see what you manifest from that, what your shadow creates from that. And it'll fuck with you in a unique way mm-hmm. that will help you grow. Mm-hmm. So if you want to do that,
yeah.
I mean, do spells, do magic, because we're making the world every day anyway.
Yeah.
You know, the way we act in the world, the way we speak, the things we choose to consume or not consume, the people we surround ourselves with, the choices we make, we're creating our worlds anyway.
This is the alchemy of life.
This is the alchemy of life. You want to try to, you know, do a spell to make a specific sexy bartender at your work fuck you, try it. And it might make you more confident and it might change how you interact with that person. And he might turn out to be a douchebag and it might be that douchebag that pushes you finally over the edge of not dating douchebags, speaking from personal experience. But, you know, I mean, the successful love spell in my life was I was dating somebody I didn't know was a horrible person. And I wanted the relationship to go to the next level. And I improvised a spell with a witchy friend of ours. And we walked around the house and we found things that symbolized the kind of relationship we wanted in our future. We were like, this, whatever it is, this, a vintage Zippo lighter represents like a sexy flame and it represents kind of a vintage romance, and this piece of leather represents like, you know, someone who's earthy, and this camping gear represents someone who wants to be outdoors with me, and this represents, you know, someone who's really excited to have kids with me, and this represents like a hot sex life, and this, and it wasn't about like, I want this person to ask me to marry them. It was like, this is the life I want.
Or some person like this, yeah. Bring them into my life.
This is what I want for my life. And within about 3 weeks, that person I was dating showed his true colors, disappeared from my life, tore my life apart. And within 3 months, I was with a person that I never would have expected, who fulfilled all of those dreams and more. Because I think that part of that magic was, you've expressed very clearly what you want. We're going to light your fucking life on fire until you get that.
Sometimes literally. Literally.
Sometimes literally. Oh,
but,
my God.
But I have to be careful, honestly.
Yeah.
Because I characterize my magic as mean auntie magic. Okay, so for those of you who don't know me personally, I have this role of mean auntie.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm the friend who's going to tell it to you like it is. Obviously, I love you. Everything comes from a place. But I'm going to tell you the truth. Because
yeah.
That's what I think friendship is. Friendship isn't about patting you on the head and going, nice job, and watching you walk off a cliff. You know, friendship is like, stop. You're about to walk off a cliff.
Yeah.
And I find my magic manifests in the same way. Exactly what you were talking about. Yeah. Not what you think you want, but like what you need.
Yeah.
Like sometimes, but it's always in the same thing, like, you know, you're manifesting whatever it is, mm-hmm. but it never comes to you in the expected way, and it's always like full of truth bombs.
Yes.
So like I have to be careful with my mean auntie magic.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the good shit. That's the real shit. Those are the people you want around you, you know? The mean auntie magic is the good
like,
stuff.
Like, don't expect that the spells that you do, what you manifest is going to be how you think it's going to go down.
It's not going to be gentle.
No, not gentle, and probably most assuredly not what you expect.
Yeah.
Yeah, like what you need, but not what you want.
Yeah,
what you didn't want to see.
Because
sometimes.
Your shape in the universe is a lot bigger than you know, so it's gonna be like, it's gonna be bigger and crazier and rougher waters than what you expect. I think
alchemy is.
You're
kind
rolling
of,
your eyes.
Yeah, I manifested this whole experience I'm living out with this. This new person in my life, and just as Risa just said, it's totally unfolding so big and large and complex. It started out smaller, and now I'm just realizing there's just so much in it that now it's my moment to kind of use my Ayurveda to back out a bit and reflect on what it is I've created, what I want to take ownership of, what now is like for me and maybe not for me at this point too, and to keep working out and continue on the journey.
For you to recognize like what's happening in your life is what you manifested. It gives you like a different sense of your own life, like recognizing your agency, recognizing, you know, instead of going, oh, my life's crazy, saying like, I manifested this. Why? I'm in control of it. How?
Yeah.
All these things.
And, you know, I'd say that's what people that may be either turned on or off to Ayurveda, that's the one place that is kind of cuts it, is whether someone believes that their action, part of their actions and their responsibilities for what they're doing is caught also in turn causing good but bad for their bodies, let's say, or their health or their suffering. And some people believe it's completely outside of their control and that any illnesses or sicknesses are just like mysteries and they got to go see the Western doctor and they're going to tell them how to cure that. Mm-hmm. Whereas Ayurveda is kind of in that. It's like you're your own agency and you have to look at what you're doing. And you're going to want be to work out of that.
And it's not just like things like smoking or eating red meat or the things that we think of as like being quote unquote unhealthy or whatever. But like cruelty, for example, in Ayurveda would have an effect on your body, your physiology.
Completely.
Correct? Yeah.
Completely would affect everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you'd have to, you know, reflect on that. And then you'd have to find the desire for some discipline. To correct your own daily effect on yourself by what you're doing and how you're thinking.
Yeah.
And that's the exciting part because then, you know, you're like, okay, so what can I do? Mm-hmm. If I, maybe I can wear like red today and it will like help me be so empowered to like do that hard thing today in that color red in your clothing, which is, you know,
I mean, part of it. Again, like Beisha is my Ayurveda, and one of the first pieces of advice she gave me was like to put a vase of flowers in my kitchen. And of course you're like, well, that's not gonna
okay, doctor.
But like, it made her life better. You know what I mean? Like, and obviously, you know, it's, please, if you have cancer, like, don't go and buy these things.
If you're in an abusive relationship, you're not bringing that on yourself and you can't, you know, you're not going to heal yourself by buying flowers.
Yeah.
Although it won't hurt.
And there are absolutely, of course, like within all of this manifest, there are things that are outside of our control.
Yeah.
Obviously. So we have to.
Most of it.
Most, 99.9% of it. But again, like as RuPaul says, like we are the alchemist of our lives.
Yeah.
So that part that we can control, we can control.
Yeah.
And of course, alchemy is always going to be experimental too.
Yeah. You know?
We were talking earlier about failure,
yeah,
the relationship between experimentation and failure, and how failure is a necessary part of experimentation, and experimentation is a necessary part of any kind of growth. Mm.
And, you know, and like rot is a necessary part of
creating the soil,
yes,
of what tree will grow.
And, yes, you know, yeah. And of changing, you know, fruit into wine or something.
Mm, of course. But for sure, I mean, again, like 99.9% of we can't control, but we can control what we do. We can control to a large extent what we put in our bodies. Mm. We control our own boundaries of what we'll allow into our lives, whether that's people or toxicity of any kind, or that's patriarchy or, again, tobacco.
Yeah. And I mean, one thing that I found helpful when I was coming out of migraine was like, that the understanding that the subconscious mind is repeating a phrase or a set of phrases that we learned when we were 4 or 5, like hundreds of thousands of times a day. So if I can combat that voice that's saying like, you know, you don't deserve love or you're not approved of or you're inadequate or you're dirty,
phony,
or you're phony or you're, you know, shit covered or you're a failure or whatever it is, by like maybe 100 times in a day, consciously saying, you know, you're loving and loved, or that's my big one. You're loving and loved.
You're loving and loved.
Or the everything I need comes to me with ease that Amy and I have jammed on many times. That's just like speaking. That's a conscious thing I can do to speak back to an unconscious pattern that is screaming, even though I can't hear it at all times.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this brings us to some of these questions we asked Ipasita.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so I'm going to take them a little bit out of order because I want to jump into the question about arrogant women.
Wonderful.
So I'll read the question that we sent to Ipasita, and then Beisha will read her answer, and we'll chat about it, and we'll probably get through. There's only like maybe 5-6 questions, but we'll get through them. We didn't want to
take up a lot of her time. We were so grateful that she was willing to, you know, answer any questions. We didn't want to give her.
And we had just done all this research and written this podcast and stuff with our like own ideas and opinions and sort of deviations around what she had said and what we'd read in her books. And so, yeah, we're just sort of trying not to fuck it up too much as always. Anyway, so here was the question. So we'd love to hear more of your thoughts on arrogant women and maybe how you see this idea of fitting into the Me Too movement or Time's Up hashtag. Is the arrogant woman finally reclaiming her time? Is this a phase or an evolution? And how has your own arrogance served you? And how can women be more positively arrogant?
You can see we're pretty excited to be asking.
Yeah, we're like, also this. We're so excited. That's one question.
Yeah. So, Beisha, if you can read us her answer, thanks.
Well, sure. A woman is the stronger sex. She always was, mentally and spiritually. Physically, her stamina is greater. Nowadays, maybe even her sheer physical strength. So why shouldn't she be arrogant? I wrote in Beloved Witch that the quality sets her at par with the goddess. If men try to invade her dignity, sanctity, and independence, they will suffer in more ways than one. These current campaigns you mention have proved that. At one time, she accepted whatever was meted out to her as her lot. No more. This is an evolution, as it should be. I have always been an arrogant woman. That's why I have not been burnt and killed in this country, as of yet. I live in a grossly patriarchal country. However, here the social status and personal arrogance of a woman are recognized, and most of my countrymen hate me, but they dare not annoy me.
Bless you.
I love her. She's such a badass.
They hate me, but they dare not annoy me. I mean, hashtag goals. While we're on the subject of hashtag goals.
I love that if men try to invade her dignity and independence, they will suffer in more ways than one. Mm-hmm.
So true.
I do come back to that in her book, and I've talked to people about that before, that like she never actively does a harm spell on anyone. She like maintains her relationship with the goddess and with her own well-being and her own spirituality, and she watches them fall, you know. Like that magic happens on its own.
I think like a non-mystical version of this is like the best revenge is living well.
Yes,
you know. And back to self-care, like you look after yourself and the universe will look after the people that have hurt you. If you don't use your energy on revenge, use it to live better and more.
Yeah, I'm struggling with this a little bit now. I was thinking about it last night. This company that we hired fucked us over, and now they owe us like $500. And I was like, just sort of doing the mental math or the emotional math of like, what energy do I spend now to try to get $500 back? And is it worth the sleepless nights I'll have writing them message and calling
angering
them,
up your pregnant blood.
Angering my pregnant blood, and then I'll get something back from them that'll be angry. And now we're in an interaction that's costing me more and more and more. And like, is that worth $500? At what point is it not worth $500, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't think any of it's worth $500. No. Right now.
And the sunk cost fallacy.
The sunk cost.
I think we get a lot caught up into the sunk cost fallacy, and to get back to mysticism, like, you know, yesterday's gone, tomorrow hasn't come. Yeah. If you don't throw good money after bad. Yes. I'm just all full of idioms today. But, like, don't waste your energy on something that's already been a waste of energy, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because you'll only sink more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of not wasting energy on negative shit, we did ask her, how can we help resist ongoing witch hunts around the world? And this question specifically relates to what she experienced in her life, and she talks about in her book, and we talk about in her podcast, that witch hunts are a very real and ongoing thing, not just in India, but in Africa and in all kinds of places. And as we want to acknowledge, like, we don't want to exoticize that. We see that as being a very real connection to the missing and murdered women in Canada, that we have strong women and women who've been demonized going missing every day in Canada. And one out of six women will experience sexual assault. There's a massive movement to try to end the backlog in the United States because we aren't processing rape kits, because there's all of these ways in which I think you can see those as a context of a 100 and 1,000 years of witch hunts.
Especially if we going back to the Ipsita quote that still shakes us to our yes. core, and we repeat it to each other. The title of the episode that we did about her, "Every Strong Woman is a Witch, and all are hunted." So the witch hunt is not, again, not, it's not something exotic. It's something that happens every day,
yeah.
everywhere, where women are trying to get out from under patriarchy,
yeah.
from under a thumb.
Yeah.
You know, this is like, don't get me started. We do not have time on the podcast to get into the entire global history of patriarchy.
Should we save that for like season two? Episode one, season two, the entire global history of patriarchy.
Angrily told. Yeah. Ranting.
Oh, yeah, we'll just have an Amy rant.
Like, yeah. You know what really grinds my gears? Patriarchy. I'm going to start at the year zero.
Yeah. I mean.
Anyway, so back
to. So anyway, we asked her this question, and here, you want to read her answer?
Sure. "Follow what I'm saying. It won't stop witch hunts, but women will become stronger and be able to resist injustice and invasion of body and mind."
Can you repeat that, please?
"Follow what I'm saying. It won't stop witch hunts, but women will become stronger and be able to resist injustice and invasion of body and mind."
Invasion of body and mind. Like, that's so...
Yeah. I think the key for that, or like one of the core thoughts I have about that, is like, yes, you know, read and follow Ipsita, but also like find your women teachers, you know, don't get stuck with one guru or these, there's so many like cults and versions and schools of patriarchy that want to invade your body and mind. And, you know, poverty itself is one, you know, but like try to find each other and support each other so that we can become stronger and able to resist injustice.
It's such a like rebellious act to befriend women and to speak about these things.
It's treasonous.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah. In a very real way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to find these like heroes that are out there and celebrate them and share their story. I mean, that's what we want to do with the podcast, but it's also what we want to do in daily life. Amy's always been a big yeller about this. They're like, "I support women artists." And I love that. I try to do that too.
So sacred, so special.
We asked her, "What's your advice for novice witches?"
"Read Beloved Witch."
So the answer of the arrogant woman.
Read the book, bitch! I love it.
"And Beloved Witch returns. Political lobbies and the press tried to boycott and wipe out the latter book, but it was published, but couldn't stop it from reaching readers."
They tried to boycott it when it was published, but they couldn't stop it from reaching readers.
And this is true. I've looked for this book. You know, if you can't find it on the internet,
oh my God.
You know, I tried to order it from India even. And, so I don't think she's being paranoid.
No.
Like, I genuinely believe they have been like a very solid effort to silence her.
Yeah. So our next question was, "For witches who feel lonely or powerless, can you share some words or a spell or a meditation?"
So just a thought, be strong and follow your star. Just as I believe in strength, I believe in each person having been given a certain destiny to follow. Follow that road with wisdom and understanding. And be cheerful about it.
It's so nice.
It's so simple.
It's so simple, but so profound.
Yeah. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Let's go back. The first question that I skipped over was, how has your thinking and magical practice changed since writing Beloved Witch?
I was always a strong woman, indifferent to what others thought. I felt myself to be a world unto myself. Now it's even more so. Perhaps my knowledge of the world, which has also changed in many ways, is such that I find myself to be more and more complete. My magical practices have become more institutionalized, in that there are more demands on my craft, my art, and my knowledge. Wow. So keep on trucking, right? Keep on learning, keep on incorporating, keep on growing out and connecting with others and incorporating and institutionalizing your own, like Anita, her own institute, the only very first Ayurvedic institute in Montreal, if not like the tiny handful in Canada, just basically having the strength to do something that no one has done and said, this matters and I'm going to stamp it. Yeah.
I love that idea, because I think in my head I make like institutionalized as like a dirty word, but I do love the idea of like women practitioners and their allies, you know, in change and stuff, and that making these practices of fighting injustice and of making healing the world and of connecting to each other, making them the institution, mm-hmm. you know, bringing them to the heart of the mainstream. We don't have to sit on the outside and be upset. We can be right, you know, we can be conquering the mainstream. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about this in the last episode too, which yeah. we'll get to. But
I mean, being an activist, I think, you know, being such a strong woman and being, you know, hated, especially pushes her need for self-care.
Yeah.
You know, we know that activism is hard, and so you especially need to, you know, put the mask on, you know, when the airplane is going, you yeah. put the mask on yourself before you attempt to help others.
Yeah, okay, so I'm going to jump to this question. We asked her, how are you doing these days? What are you reading? What are you excited about? She wrote,
by the grace of the goddess, I am doing good. I look fabulous.
Fuck yeah, you do.
My last book, Voice of the Priestess, is breaking the charts. My enemies are crawling. I'm spending my time between India and London, where I do lectures on the subject. My Wiccan brigade, founded by me, is planning psychic adventures. We have already covered Bangar in Rajasthan, the 64 Yogini Temple in Orissa, Nartiang, the Megalith Garden, and in Meghalaya, if I'm pronouncing these special words correctly, and the Sacred Forest. I am reading up to as much as I can on the Sakta and the Pre-Vedic cultures in India. On the lighter side, I always go back to Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, should God. We just end on that?
Okay, one more question. I always go back to Winnie the Pooh. Last question. We asked her, do you still bathe in rose petals? And she just wrote,
So, from Ippy the Wiccan, from Ayurveda Besha, from 8-month pregnant Risa, and from me, take care of yourselves. It's so important. Just look after yourself, babe, and everything else will fall into place.
It's worth it. Really is.
We love you.
We love you.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, witches, we're doing this podcast not to teach, but to learn. So if you have a story or you have some information that will help all of us understand better what this world of magic is about, oh my god, we want to hear from you. So please email us at missingwitches@gmail.com or share with us on Instagram. Tag us in your photos, Missing Witches, or use the hashtag.